a wild man.
I want you to struggle, and I want you wrestling with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
Your Plainsman Park time is 9:19 p.m. You are tuned in to the Orange and True podcast. I am your host, Ryan Starrett, on Twitter at Ryan S. Starrett. The S stands for snakes this week. Joining me tonight, we have the snake whisperer, the parcel tongue himself, AU Chief. Chief, have you adopted any more snakes on your front porch this week?
No. Just the one.
Just the one.
Tell you who's not a snake, though. Jordan Pickford.
I saw that score Sunday, and I was with a friend of mine on a little golf trip last weekend. He's a big Premier League guy, and I asked him, I said, hey, is Everton beating Chelsea 1-0 a big deal? And he went, what?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was crazy. It was pandemonium in my house when we scored the goal. There was a lot of angst at the end of the game when the referee added 7 minutes of time, and then it still went on beyond that, just yelling to blow the whistle. When the goal went in, I had a really amazing dad moment. My 2-year-old seeing the players hug on TV ran up to me and hit me with a hug, which was awesome. So we got to do our own little goal celebration in house, Chief, and it's really amazing. It doesn't wins like that, it doesn't get much better than that. Just not back against the wall, really needing the win, because Burnley, who couldn't win anything most of the year, have all of a sudden started winning after they fired their manager, and Everton really had to win that to just not fall further and further behind. They're still in the relegation zone, but they have a game in hand, and theoretically should be able to win their next two home. They have two more home games left and should be able to win those if they can beat that Chelsea team. So,
so what's the context for this? What's the college football equivalent of Everton beating Chelsea? This Everton team, this Chelsea team, I don't know what their comps are.
This Chelsea team is firmly in third place. They're not going to get into the top two.
They could Texas A&M.
They could feasibly fall out of the into fourth place, but they probably shouldn't. They're just coasting at this point. They're going to make the Champions League, but honestly, I don't think that is why they lost this game. I just think that, Frank Lampard, former Chelsea player, is our manager now. Former Chelsea coach, and knows all of these players intimately. Like basically, all of them were there when he was there as their coach. So he knew how to play them, and his game plan was perfect. The home crowd, it was insane. Before the games, like, you couldn't walk through the street. There were pictures floating around of a dog being lifted over someone's head and carried through the crowd because they were just out walking their dog and then couldn't get back home because of the crowd outside. The sound inside the stadium was crazy. The fans were rowdy. It was equivalent to an Iron Bowl, I don't know if the 2009 Iron Bowl was exactly that loud, but the crowd, the crowd's always pretty rowdy for an Iron Bowl, especially if we're in the game. So the crowd really pushes those players on, and the home games have been a lot different this year than away games. The fact that they kept a clean sheet was very surprising. They drew with Chelsea earlier this year already, so it wasn't crazy that they were able to beat them. But as bad as Everton have looked at times, any win is surprising.
Got it.
Beating them would have been like Auburn beating Alabama in 09, basically.
Okay. Similar to 2019 Auburn beating Bama, maybe?
Yeah, we'll go there. Yeah, actually, that's probably although Chelsea is not Bama. They're not that dominant.
Well, and that was, remember, that Bama team is the playoff too, so.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, perfect.
Keith, when this episode comes out, it will be May 4th. How are you celebrating Star Wars Day?
I'll be watching Moon Knight. I'll probably buy some things I shouldn't. I already bought Legos, Star Wars Legos.
What'd you get?
I got several sets. I got the Darth Vader meditation chamber, which I'd been eyeballing, and I bought the Luke Skywalker scene from is this a spoiler? Anyway, the hallway
show
scene, hallway scene with the droids. Yeah. And I got what was the other one? Oh, the Dagobah diorama set that they just came out with too. Cool. And with that, because I spent so much money, I got the Lars Homestead free. And a free AT-AT that kind of looks like crap. The Lars Homestead's pretty cool.
It'll be featured in the upcoming Star Wars show, Obi-Wan.
Oh, that's right. I'll probably end up buying another one of these. The plan was to buy two of the meditation chambers because I'll be able to sell one of those for a lot of money later on. So. I could always keep that Lars Homestead in the thing and sell it for triple what I bought it for too.
So is Star Wars Lego a you thing, or have the kids gotten into it yet?
No, Alex has put several of them together. These the meditation chamber and the diorama are the like 18 and up deals, 16 and up, whatever. But the other one is not. And he goes back, like right now, he's just like refusing to do Legos, especially if it has anything above 6 on it. Like he can see the age on it and he says he can't do it. So it's a thing. Like he got all these Legos for Christmas and he won't put any of them together currently for some reason.
Well, then you can give them to him again when he's 6.
He is 6.
Is he 6 already? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, six years old, not 6 and a half soon. He's 6, entering first grade next year, about to graduate kindergarten. It's insane. But
I picture him as my nephew's age, and my nephew's 4, but I knew he was older than
me. Yeah, he's helped me put some together. His classmate got him a set and like he made me put it together because he didn't want to because it said like 10 and up on it or something. He's funny. I mean, I don't mind. I like, doing them. It's like a puzzle. But yep.
Well, here's a transition for you. Speaking of somebody who acts like a 6-year-old, how about Tennessee's head baseball coach throwing back at the Auburn celebration after the go-ahead home run.
Yeah. What
Saturday afternoon.
that was something else. What a guy.
Can't let those kids have fun. It's not allowed.
Yeah. I mean, in the heat of the moment, I see it like the bat just bounced the right way to go into the dugout.
Sure. I do want to make a correction on that. It didn't go in the dugout.
It went almost up to the net. Yeah. I mean, got it. It's fine. Like that was an accident. And I understand you kind of lose it in that moment, but maybe don't throw the bat at, unpaid kids or young adults.
Especially when it's been a thing all year about your team.
Maybe
the celebrators.
Yeah, maybe if you got a problem with it, you know, take the bat back over there and then yell at the Butch or somebody.
Well, just like, even better, keep the bat.
I keep the bat. There you go.
They donated it.
I don't know.
So for the weekend, Auburn went to number one Tennessee up in Knoxville. Only won one of the three games, but that one win for Auburn is Tennessee's second conference loss of the year. That's it. So pretty big to even get one. It's a big statement for Auburn baseball with a dramatic double to tie it up in the ninth inning and then a three-run go-ahead homer by Bobby Pierce. That kind of set in motion that whole chain of events there. And then Auburn played them tight on Sunday, too. Had a lead going into the middle of the game or so. Wasn't able to hold on. I think it lost 5-3 was the final.
Yeah. I always hate when opposing teams, like, patronize you after you've, played them tight. But I did have a Tennessee fan who did seem pretty genuine about, like, wow, you guys are really good. Like, this was a great series. It's been fun to watch. And he actually did say, like, prior to that home run and the late home run, it was also before they went ahead before that. He told me he thought that we were going to win that game too. I mean, we were ahead, late. I just, it was crazy. Was it? Yeah, it was all three games. We led in late innings. Right.
Right. Yeah. And Friday night's game got out of hand. Auburn was up like 6-4 or something
in the middle sixth of the game, inning and seventh inning. Right.
Yeah.
Was it the seventh?
I think over two inning span, Tennessee had six home runs. So that game got out of hand pretty quickly, which makes winning that game Saturday even better. Not getting too down on themselves, coming back and grabbing that next game.
Well, we went into this and I'm pretty sure Drew mentioned this when he was on, just stealing one there was really the goal. And we managed to do it. And I feel like, close doesn't really matter, but we showed that we could hang with them and, we pushed them and, we're very close to taking at least two of those games. To lead in late innings against that team that is very good. We account for 1/4 of their losses this year. I mean, that's really good. And it, losing that series doesn't really hurt our standing because of how good they were.
Yeah. And really, just taking one of those three really helped Auburn's standing.
Right. Exactly.
Auburn's up to number 3 in RPI right now.
That's
insane.
Auburn's played a really tough schedule. It's only one that matters, RPI.
Auburn's played a tough schedule and, gotten some road wins like this one in Knoxville. So that definitely helps. Looking at some of the regional projections, they're not all out yet, but some of the ones I've seen so far has Auburn around the 8-10 range, which makes you a regional host. The top 16 are. So that would be awesome. I mean, if you can get inside the top 8, then you're looking at controlling a super regional, which – after last season, I don't think anybody thought that was in the cards for this team.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it's just an odd thing because, look at last year and you went into the year thinking, we're set up great here. We could do everything and then didn't. And then this year, you kind of came in like, we might do okay this year. I believe
Drew told us preseason that it was like, we think this could be a 2-seed, probably, or maybe a 3-seed team. Everything has to break right to be a regional host. And it seems like everything's breaking right so far.
Yeah. I mean, we've got, three weekends?
Three weekends left in the season. And really, this
week. Maybe win all those midweeks, too. So that's
right. So this weekend's another big series. We're hosting Arkansas, who's, across the board, kind of a top 5 team. You definitely expect to win one of those. You're extremely excited if you win two of them.
Right.
If you win three, you're a top 5 team at that point.
Yeah.
You get through that, and then this rest of the schedule really kind of softens up. You host Troy for a midweek game. you host Alabama the weekend after that. And Alabama's, you know, one of the bottom four or five teams in the conference right now. And then you finish on the road. Yeah, you finish on the road at Samford and at Kentucky for the final weekend. And really the toughest game out of those, you know, Troy, Bama, Samford, Kentucky, the toughest one on there is at Samford. So, you know, no gimmies for sure, but you get through Tennessee, you get through Arkansas, you kind of got a little bit of a breather here at the end of the schedule.
Yeah. It's similar to the year that Auburn, you know, made it to the World Series, and that we went into that season. That season was really a year early. It was the next year right. That we really felt like we were going to be set up to do well.
And the next year was COVID.
I really feel like this team is better than that team was. I mean, thus far.
There's been a couple surprises. Gonzalez pitching on Sundays, he's been fantastic.
Yep.
All season long, really. And of course, Sonny DeShera, we'll talk about him. We've been talking about him all season. He is just still playing out of his mind. I don't know. I haven't checked these watch lists super closely, but I would have to imagine he's a Golden Spikes candidate, which is insane considering he transferred from Samford last season. but he's leading the country in batting average at .436. He's leading the country in on-base percentage at .597. He's second in the country with 50 walks, and he's third in the country in slugging at .842.
Those are absurd numbers. I wonder if him ending up at Samford, I wonder if just him not looking like an athlete had teams just really not paying attention to him in high school, or not really giving him as much of a fair shake. I don't know. Or maybe he just really developed.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he went to Hoover, so he definitely had a chance to have eyes on him.
Right.
I'm not sure what his story is on how he ended up at Samford. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Maybe he's just a really good Baptist.
Well, regardless, glad he's at Auburn this season. He's just been a revelation. All up and down the lineup and – you know, exciting having Gonzalez on Sundays. It's been a great season for Auburn. Like, you know, everything's, like we said, is broken right. If that continues to happen, it could be a great run in the postseason.
Yeah, I'm excited. This is about the time I really, really start, you know, getting into Auburn baseball. I go early. That's usually it. And then, you know, the last 2-3 weekends of the
sure.
year.
Sure. Yeah. The weather's nice. We're done with basketball. We've had a breather.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're past all like the busyness that is kind of the late March, early April.
The Braves are usually sucking right around now, which.
Yeah. And hey, and as long as they're on Bali, we can't watch them anyways.
Yeah. There you go. Well,
legally. This podcast does not condone piracy, Chief.
Okay. I've got the MLB TV.
Yeah, you can't watch it on MLB TV. We're blacked out.
No, well.
Anyways, get out to Plainsman Park. We've got 7 games left the next 2 weeks. Big series with Arkansas, and then you know, you get Bama. It's always fun to beat Bama. And then couple weeks off and hopefully a regional and maybe even a super regional.
Yep, that'd be cool. And you'll get some reporting here about those for sure.
Come postseason, I'm hoping we can make Drew Mack a permanent member of the pod.
So. Yeah, we can get I feel like we can definitely get him on to preview the regional if that happens. For those of you that like, you know, informative stuff, I don't know. I don't know why you're listening to this pod, but, you know, whatever.
Occasionally we do good things, Chief. Occasionally.
Okay. All right.
Well, you take a break real quick and then come back and talk basketball?
Yeah, sounds good.
We are back at 1942. It's not usually a good time to jump into things. Big week for Auburn basketball.
Man, that's a good one.
Big week for Auburn basketball. Commitment of Janiah Broome at the end of last week. As good of a center as Auburn can ask for once Walker Kessler left. He was dominant at Moorhead last season in the OVC, played a game in Auburn Arena, season opener. I'll cop to it now. Most of my scouting has come via Ferg and Drew on Twitter at Orange and Drew. So if you hear a lot of repeat thoughts and observations, it probably comes from there.
I've watched a lot of highlights.
Yeah. He's been fantastic. He's a little bit smaller than Walker, which, you know, most people are. He's 6'10", but plays with a similar...
Way too short.
He's undersized. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Would have been the biggest guy on any of those early Bruce or any of... any of Auburn teams. Team?
Yeah. Any Auburn team that didn't have Mamadou Inja or Boubacar Silla on it.
But yeah, was as good in his numbers as Walker last year, just at a lower level of competition. I think he was 17 and 11 points and rebounds. Was third in the country in blocks. The two guys ahead of him were number one, obviously Walker, and number two was that 7'5" center from Western Kentucky. So. Jumping in there at 6'10" with those two guys is pretty good.
Yeah. I like what I've seen of his game. He's he's different than basically anybody we've seen at that position, I think. He
combines a lot of what some of the different centers Bruce has had. He kind of combines some of those skill sets.
Yeah, I kind of feel like he's if you want to think about how he can play, he's a little more Horace. Horace is kind of like a better Horace. No offense to my dude Horace.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's he definitely looks like him body-wise.
Horace, once he had hands. Should say. That was an issue early on. I mean, he can put the ball on the floor a lot more than basically any of the guys that I think that we've had. I mean, obviously Walker could.
You didn't really want him to.
Yeah. I like that about him. It's a lot more going through contact. Walker didn't really have to go through contact a whole lot because he could just go over.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't think a few inches would matter there, but it does apparently. So
just gonna let that one ride.
She said.
Except on the defensive end, does a lot of what we saw with Walker last year. He's pretty mobile. I mean, he's not just stand in the paint and let you come to him kind of guy. He'll go out the perimeter and guard somebody. He'll pick up somebody outside the paint. And he'll also come back and, get a decent amount of blocks as just a help defender.
Yeah, he was, third in the country in blocks?
Yeah, yeah. I think he was like four per game. I think he was at 3.9 or 4.0 per game. But then on the offensive end, he's, he doesn't shoot threes. Maybe that's probably a good thing after we've seen some Auburn big men try to develop a three-point shot and fail.
Wow. That worked for Anthony
until it didn't.
All right.
But yeah, he goes to the rim. He's got a pretty good post up game, and he'll take some jump shots, at the elbow. But kind of knows his range, doesn't really go outside of that. I think he attempted 5 threes last year and missed them all. But he's a high volume guy, so he obviously at a smaller school at Moorhead, he's by far the best player on that offense. So he got a lot of looks kind of just feeding down into the paint, which is something I think Auburn could have used more last year. Auburn kind of struggled to get space on the perimeter because we didn't really have anybody going to the rim.
Right.
That's, you know, but you think back to the Austin Wiley teams, it seemed like there was a lot more, you know, a term Crow use all the time is gravity. In paint. You're bringing guys in there to open up the perimeter for shots. So hopefully that's something he can create at a higher level of competition.
Yeah. Well, we need some people that can actually make some perimeter shots for that to be a
very true. Very true.
Factor. But hey, I'm excited about him. He it clearly means now that Johan will be playing a four.
Right.
Because so we'll have 2 6'10" dudes. Which is cool.
And don't forget Carwell.
And Dylan, who will be back up five again. I don't know what this means for Jalen Williams, though.
So I was kind of trying to, you know, place out the minutes the other day. And so really your front court is the main four of Jani Broome, Dylan Carwell, Jalen Williams, and Johan Traore. Those four guys I would expect to get, you know, 99% of the minutes, assuming they're healthy, you know, no outside factors going on there.
Right.
I would probably expect Jalen and Traore to get all the minutes at the four and maybe pick up a few small ball minutes at five.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're both the kind of borderline guys that could play center in some systems. You know, Jalen's done that a couple times over the last few years. And what it really does is and I hate to say this now, because I'm sure just like saying that a team is bad at shooting threes before they're playing them always comes back to bite us. This kind of foul proofs Auburn's front court. You know, you have four guys that you trust, all of them can play center. And you could even bring some of your wings out to play four if you had to. And I know me saying that there's going to be a big game next year where you know, three of those four guys are in foul trouble in the first half and you have to figure out a way around it. It's probably going to be against Florida. It always is. But yeah, I mean, you can't replace, you know, a top three draft pick and probably another first rounder in Walker and the National Defensive Player in the Year. But Auburn's gone out and done as good of a job as you can really ask for this offseason. So excited to see what the front court does. I think there's a lot of talent there, and they're as deep as they've ever been. Dylan Carwell was playing great basketball at the end of the year, too. I mean, I think we've all kind of expressed some concern about, would he have been ready to be a 25-minute-a-game guy? Now he won't have to be. He still has three more years of eligibility, as does Broome, by the way.
Yeah, Broome also does.
Yeah, he's another guy that's going to be playing his third year, but because of COVID, he'll have three more years.
I do. There's no way he plays 3 years here.
No, so we can talk about that.
He's coming here to better himself and be in the NBA draft next year is the reason he's coming.
Right. I mean, you look at
that's why Traore's coming here as well. That's why
everybody should come here.
Because
Bruce can, if you're not one of those top five guys who can, you know, play 35 minutes a game at Kentucky or go to the G League or basically how to pick the litter on where you want to be. If you're a top 50 guy, then you could still probably go anywhere, but you're not a slam dunk, you know, lottery pick.
Right.
Bruce has a really good track record now of getting those guys into the first round. And getting him into the pros. It's just about a guy a year at this point. And now he's going to have a couple of options. Traore and Westry, both top 50 guys. Broome also, you know, could be a guy that we're talking about in the draft next year. On KenPom, you know, I took a look at his player comps for this past season. And usually, so that they take into account where you played and your age, your size, your numbers, to kind of just see what, you know, of your entire season, how does that compare to other players over the last like 10 to 15 years or however many years they have data for on KenPom. And coming from a smaller school, I wouldn't have expected a ton of NBA guys to be on his comp list. But kind of running through it, his number one comp is Mike Muscala, who played at Bucknell. Another small school guy. Nathan Knight, Charles Bassey, Western Kentucky last year. He was a draft pick. He's played some in the NBA this year. Couple guys, SEC guys you may recognize, Jamichael Green out of Bama and Damian Jones out of Vandy. They've both been in the NBA for a long time now. I think they've got like 800 or 900 games between the two of them. Yeah, Broome, really, I mean, he compared to NBA talent last season. Probably if he had gone to the NBA this year, probably wouldn't have been a first-round pick. Probably a second-rounder. But he can come to Auburn, play with a ton of elite talent, play against a lot.
Win a national championship.
Win a national championship, you know, become a hero. And
make history, as my dude Bruce would say.
And yeah, maybe be a first round pick next year.
Also, he's getting a sweet trip to Tel Aviv next year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not next year, in the summer.
Yeah, in a couple months. Yeah.
Yeah.
Head over to Israel.
Be fun. As long as they don't, you know, get bombed.
Everywhere is going to be World War III.
Well, it's
not going to matter.
Yeah, but I, you know what? Bring on more. I mentioned Julian Phillips briefly there.
Yeah.
We're looking, I think you said before the show started, next week, maybe?
Yeah, so not, he hasn't set an official date, but it sounds like they're reporting coming out tonight, maybe, that he's looking at sometime next week. I think for a while, the general date was mid-May, so next week makes sense. Sounds like it's down to Auburn or Tennessee in this one. He did make a trip to Kansas State last week, and I'm not really sure why. It sounds like he's considering him. Maybe there's a connection with a coach or a friend or something. I don't know. But yeah, coming down to Auburn and Tennessee, another five-star guy, another top 20 guy. If Auburn lands Phillips after landing Broome, after landing Westry, after landing Traore,
it's insane.
That is far and away the best class Auburn's ever signed. Not the best player. That was Jabari last year. But you would get the second and third best players. And I think Westry's top 10 as well. Or if not, they're very close to it. So just a ton of talent coming in on this roster. I don't envy Bruce on trying to figure out all the minutes. But as a fan, it's a great problem to have.
Yeah, it is. I assume that we'll lose at least one more person off this roster. I think Crow and I sort of touched on that last week, so we don't have to rehash that again. But
sure. Yeah, I mean, Auburn's, under Bruce, has never utilized all 13 scholarships.
Yeah.
So I would be, I mean, short of like giving one to the walk-on at the start of the season.
Right.
But as far as guys you recruited on scholarship. So I would be surprised if we went into the season with 13 scholarship guys. But
yeah,
you never know.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be fun, no matter what happens here. I'm gonna be bummed if we don't get Phillips. He's a very exciting player, but you know, it feels
I'd be just as bummed that we would be seeing him at Tennessee, honestly.
Yeah, and it's also a little maybe greedy. After adding the rest, a good recruiting class, and then adding these guys here at the end, feels a little greedy to be mad about not getting him. But like you said, if he ends up at Tennessee, it stinks a good bit. But you know what? Maybe by the time we speak again next week, then we'll know that Julian Phillips is a Tiger. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you add Phillips, I mean, Auburn's already kind of a borderline top 10 team maybe going into next year. Still yeah. Plenty of roster decisions across the country. Guys going to the NBA or coming back. Most of the transfer portal is done at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you add Phillips, you're inching in on maybe a top five roster.
I guess that's another twist or element. Yeah, there we go. To this is that guys can't enter the portal now, right?
Right. So you had to be in by May 1st to transfer and be eligible next year.
So basically, if anybody leaves,
they're not eligible next season.
Yeah, they can't play next season, or they're going pro.
Right.
Interesting.
So two guys in the that have added their names to the draft process. I don't know if that was touched on last week or what day that happened, but Dylan Cardwell, Alan Flanagan, both put their name out there. They'll get the feedback. Seems like they'll probably be back. Yeah, you never know. But
yeah, well, that'll be interesting. Again, yep. Crow and I kind of waxed about that for a while last week.
Did you get into the scheduling news that came out either last week or the week prior?
No, not really. No, we didn't.
Okay. So Auburn's, you know, it's the time of year where you start adding non-con games. Even if they don't have dates yet, just kind of getting agreements put in place. Auburn announced that they were going to make that return trip to Washington, which was a 2018 was the Final Four team that hosted Washington.
I think that's right.
Yeah, that was a massive game at the time because that was Washington was ranked, and
yeah,
that was Auburn's first win over a ranked non-con opponent in Auburn Arena, maybe
something
or,
like that,
or in several years. So Auburn will be going back out to Seattle finally this year, and they also said that it'll be one big road trip doing the game in Seattle and going to USC for a game. So I would expect that probably in December, maybe after finals. But if you're looking for a December trip this year, maybe keep that in mind.
Yeah. I'd really like to make that trip myself. I'd like to drive down or up the coast. I can't remember. Which one's first?
They haven't said yet. Yeah, I would expect one to be a midweek and one to be a Saturday game. But yeah, they haven't said which one would be when. It'd
be really cool to drive up or down the California coast. The 101, I believe, is goes all the way up that way. I guess it goes on into Washington through Oregon into Washington. Yeah, that's right. But that'd be cool because I'd like to see that part of the country. I've always wanted to go to the Redwood Forest. I need to make a pilgrimage to San Fran, which the plan is really to do that for the Cal game, since that's the some Northern California, right? but we'll see. That's related to the beginning of the show, the Star Wars Day, because Star Wars all started Marin County or Marin County.
Gonna head out to the ranch?
Yeah, I would. I'd like to go there. I'd like to go to the Presidio, which is where Lucasfilm's offices are. And also, fun fact, where Metallica's Saint Anger was, they started recording there before James had to go to rehab. So it's an old, I believe, World War II fort, possibly internment camp. Not real sure about that one. But it's right there on the bay. I think you can see the Golden Gate from it. It's a pretty big complex there, but and obviously I'd like to drive across the Golden Gate Bridge. Cool.
You want to go see Alcatraz? Alcatraz guy?
I would. I don't know if I want to spend that much time in San Francisco, just to be honest with you.
Go to A's game in Oakland.
Yeah.
Get a fight off the feral cats.
There would be dozens of us there. Yeah, that would be cool. I doubt I'm going to be able to make this dream happen to drive down the coast like that, but you never know. I'd like to go see Pre's Rock in Eugene, Oregon.
Guys, if you like the show, donate to Chief's GoFundMe to send him down the coast.
Sure. Let me ask you a question, Ryan.
Yeah.
What kind of pets did you have growing up?
We were dog people.
Dog people?
We pretty much always had one dog.
You didn't have any other kind of small animals or?
I may have had a fish for a little while, but you know, okay. not any big scale thing, no.
There's a desire for a guinea pig in this house, apparently. I've been going through that lately. Didn't know if you had ever owned something like that.
Yes, I have. Going back to the very beginning of the show, you have to be pretty careful with your outdoor wildlife if you got a guinea pig.
Yeah?
With the snake that's your new buddy out front. Prime eating.
Well, this snake was not big enough to eat a guinea pig. You could eat a hamster. I saw a toad out on my porch earlier this evening before we started recording, and I looked over at him and said, "Better watch yourself, buddy." And walked on. There was actually also a lizard out on the porch, which I'm surprised didn't get eaten. But I think the Mr. Rat Snake was probably had himself a chicken egg or a chicken last night, because my neighbors have chickens now. And so I much to my wife's chagrin, do suspect we'll be seeing more legless visitors coming our way.
With all this construction over in Auburn these days, it's good to have them around, keep the rats at bay.
Well, that's true. The last time when they cleared off a bunch of lots, we had a ton of timber rattlers showing up in our neighborhood.
You don't want that.
Which is, and boy, these were big hosses. I've never seen any of them that big. They were gigantic, crawling out of the woodworks. That was a few summers ago, and I haven't seen any since then. Got no problems with snakes. Just don't want any rattlers around. That's bad.
Keep the rattlers and keep the cottonmouths in the woods.
Yeah, I guess we could have cottonmouths around here. Copperheads for sure. The only thing I've seen here at the house, though, is that one rat snake. And then the first year we were here, had just a random water snake show up after a big rain in the backyard. And then my neighbors found, a milk snake, I think is what it was. I can't remember now. It's a pretty little snake. But I know many of our listeners are probably disgusted by not just wanting to kill the snakes, but whatever. Just call me St. Patrick.
You got to put your green Auburn hat on when you say that, Chief.
That's right. My wife was very, very displeased that I did not relocate the snake immediately. Instead, I went and sat in the chair about a foot from it and took pictures of it.
Put them on Instagram.
Yeah.
All right. Just one more thing before we get out of here, Chief. It's Marvel movie week. Give me one prediction for Doctor Strange.
I don't have any predictions. I don't know. Benedict Cumberbatch will be in it.
Pretty sure you'll be right on that one.
There'll be something about the movie that annoys me.
I can guarantee that.
Should probably just let go, and then I won't be able to. I should shout out my buddy Phil. He messaged me the other day and had a great idea. He thought that they should have multiple endings to the movie and play all of them at different theaters at different times. You never know what you're going to get. So that'd be a good way to get people to keep going back to the movies. You know, it's like a pack of cards that you open. You're trying to rip the card and get the right ending. Yeah.
Makes me think of like giveaways in cereal growing up where you had to collect all six
yeah.
and you could send it in. And,
yeah. That'd be incredible.
That'd be pretty on theme for the multiverse.
Yeah. Do you have a prediction?
Okay. I know your stance on spoilers.
Yeah.
And technically this isn't a spoiler anymore because it was in a Marvel promo that came out like last week. Mm-hmm. You taking the headphones off so you don't hear what I'm saying?
No, my ear was hurting.
So there was a character confirmed to be in it that I had not heard anything about until like last week. And then see again today that she's at the premiere. Or
America Chavez. I mean, she was in the trailers.
Talking about Miss Carter? Agent Carter?
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So there's a very short scene in one of the trailers that you see the Captain Britain shield.
Yeah.
From What If.
Yeah.
And then she's at the premiere last night.
Yeah. Everybody.
I had not heard any buzz around that.
Go watch What If you haven't. I know you're probably thinking, oh, cartoons, but it's
at the very least, go see the Doctor Strange episode of What If. It is, I have a feeling it'll be highly important to this movie.
Yeah. Try to get past the really just nonsensical setup. Like, it just doesn't make any sense at all.
That episode has like the weakest premise, but the most interesting plot, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just wanted to do a Doctor Strange episode, I think.
Yeah, I still don't get it. I still don't get what, like, all the rest of them are like, hey, what if this different thing happened at this inflection point? And that one's just like, hey, what if this totally different thing happened instead of this?
Right.
Whatever. Yeah, I'm excited about Doctor Strange Thursday, as always. We got Moon Knight ending tomorrow.
I have no idea what to expect for that. I can't even give you a prediction.
Yeah, that's... I couldn't tell you. I'm wondering if we get some sort of announcements Star Wars related tomorrow for May the 4th. You know, the real Star Wars day is May 25th. It always was. May the 4th didn't really gain traction until about 10 years ago.
I was wondering about that. I was wondering if there's is that corny for like real hardcore Star Wars fans? Or
no, it's I've heard some people complain about it. I mean, more Star Wars days, the better. I mean, this is Star Wars month, along with being Maytallica. It is Star Wars month because all of the movies that matter came out in this month. So,
Chief, what if we got Metallica in a Star Wars movie?
It'd be incredible. Incredible. You know, one of the first things
at Mos Eisley's Cantina.
One of the first songs that I ever searched out on the internet was Metallica doing the Imperial March, and I'm convinced. If you ever, I found it before Napster, but if you were ever on Napster, it was like all over Napster. I'm fairly certain it's not Metallica performing Imperial March, but because this is Star Wars month, we're all up in it. May the 4th was a funny meme thing that has turned into this corporate holiday sort of, which is, you know, whatever. But the 25th was always Star Wars Day prior to that. But for me, May 19th is a big, it's big because it was episode 1 and episode 3 came out that day. May 16th, episode